Welcome back in. Hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, David Beauclair, Ryan Porth in here today on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. David Beauclair will be in today and tomorrow for Joe Rex Road. Looking forward to that. It's been a great start to the show with David Beauclair. Covers the Titans for SI.com. And David, we talked about this offense and Derrick Henry, his role in the offense, what his usage should be this year. Let's go to our text line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Ben texting in, Titans' all-time top stars aren't as strong as some other teams. Henry can easily become the greatest Titan on one hand, but on the other, the nostalgia and aura that surrounded the Titans' Super Bowl era when they were new makes it hard to beat McNair and Eddie. Get us a ring or keep this up for another 4 years, and Derrick Henry gets in that conversation. What do you think of the idea of Derrick Henry as it relates to the greatest Titans that we've seen? How close do you think he is to putting himself in that conversation? Is he already in that conversation?
It's a really interesting question to me, and he is very much in the conversation. You look at it, you know, you start, okay, compare him to Eddie George because that's the easiest starting place. He has exceeded Eddie George, and as great as Eddie is and was, and you know, no disrespect to him, but Eddie never led the league in rushing. Eddie never led the league in rushing touchdowns. Eddie never led, you know, it never had 2,000 yards. Eddie was never offensive player of the year.
Yep.
You know, Derrick Henry's done all of that already. Even though Eddie was, you know, over 1,000 yards every year of his career, except for the year in Dallas, you know, that and that put him in some pretty interesting company, too, to go 10 straight years from the start of your career with 1,000 yards. You say, okay, he's exceeded him. Steve McNair is where it gets a little dicey. Steve McNair was the MVP. McNair had so many amazing moments late in games.
Yep.
And the ability to play hurt and play through all the injuries and whatnot, that's – I would say it's really close, but I'm still going to give my tip of the cap to McNair right now just because of you know, as the text suggested there, the Super Bowl run and the success that McNair had in the playoffs, particularly that year. You know, then beyond that, you get into the whole – does the Oilers era count kind of thing?
Sure.
You know, I mean, because we saw Bruce Matthews at the end of his career. Bruce Matthews' career was unbelievable. And you talk about a guy similar to Derrick Henry, a guy who was just naturally built to do what he did. Like, Bruce Matthews is the one offensive lineman you saw him. He didn't look outsized. Like, he was just that big.
Yeah.
And I remember, I will never forget this. It was my second year maybe covering the team. It was a game in Pittsburgh, and it was, you know, early in the second quarter, not a lot going on in the game or whatever, and Titans had gotten the ball. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, I've heard so much about Bruce Matthews. I'm going to spend this drive. I'm just going to watch Bruce Matthews, and I want to get a sense of what – and literally the second play after I thought that, the Steelers came on a blitz, as they're likely to do. The ball is snapped. Matthews, playing left guard, stands the guy up who's across him. Just literally stands him up, stonewalls him. The guy can't even budge moving forward. The blitz starts coming to Matthews' left. So Bruce takes half a step to his left, keeps his right hand in the chest of the guy he's blocking, holds him off. The blitzer comes, takes his left hand, left shoulder, and throws it into the blitzer and knocks him sideways. And I thought, okay, I'm done watching.
Yeah, you know, I don't need to see anything else.
That's all I need to know there. I mean, that. So, I mean, as I cover the team, I tend to distinguish between, you know, 1999 and pre-1999.
Sure.
and say, you know, I kind of write everything based on the Titans era. So, you know, Bruce Matthews is the greatest player in franchise history. Is he the greatest player in quote-unquote Titans history? Because we only saw him for 4 years at the end of his career.
Right.
You know, that's worth arguing, I guess, at that point. But for me, in terms of the Titans era, it's Derrick Henry or Steve McNair right now. And then, you know, if you want to talk about a top 10, that's where you get into fun stuff with Javon Kearse,
yep,
and, you know, Brad Hopkins, Michael Roos, you know, the
Keith
left
Bullock,
tackle,
yep,
discussion, that kind of thing. Keith Bullock absolutely was, would be way up there in the top five.
Chris Johnson,
yep, yeah.
Eddie, obviously.
Eddie would be in the mix very much. Frank Wycheck.
Brett Kern.
Oh, yeah.
Is he not in the top 10?
Joe Rexroad would put him in the top 10.
You know, you joke about that, but
he's
Brett Kern is one whale of a punter.
He is.
I mean, I remember at times thinking Craig Hendrick is the best punter ever, and, you know, Brett Kern does way more with the football than Craig Hendrick did. It's been fun to sort of watch the evolution of,
yeah,
that position, and it's not just a guy, oh, just go kick the hell out of it and see what happens anymore. There's so much of a science to that.
So, Ryan Porth, as you look at this Titans team since they've been here in 1999, we know about McNair. We know about Eddie George. We know the glory days with the Titans. Hopefully, you're seeing if they can get back into that now at this point. Is Derrick Henry in the conversation as the greatest Titan of all time? Is he the greatest Titan of all time? How much work does he have left to do on that front, in your opinion?
Who was it that said that Derrick Henry needs to do this for 4 more years to become the greatest Titan of all time?
That was Ben.
All right. I would say if he does this for 2 more years and they have some sort of level of playoff success, even if they don't make it to the Super Bowl, I think Derrick Henry is knocking on the door of eclipsing Steve McNair at that point.
If he goes for 2,000 again, if he goes,
yeah,
for,
sure,
2,000 this year, is named the NFL MVP. I mean, you do something no running back has ever, even in the seven. Even if he has 1,850 after 16 games and then has a good 17th game, I don't care. Give it to him anyway.
I mean, he has become an NFL superstar more, I would say, than what Steve McNair was.
I would say so, too. I wonder how much of that has to do with kind of the era we're in with social media. Like, when he stiff-arms somebody's soul out of their body, I mean, that goes viral. I mean,
yeah,
it's what it does around the league. McNair, like, as good as McNair was, a lot of what made McNair great was just his willingness to play through injury, to make big plays when his team needed it the most. Like, I still think back to, even though they came up a yard short, I mean, his play on that final drive in the Super Bowl, it was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he did that time and time again. But that still this day, like, even though they didn't score, like, maybe the most impressive quarterback play that I have seen out of this team came on that final drive in the Super Bowl. It's unbelievable how good he was.
But to that point, you know, Derrick Henry comes out of Alabama as,
yep,
a Heisman Trophy winner, you know, 2,000-yard rusher his last year in college. There, you know, he had a lot of hype and a lot of adoration as it was. Yeah, McNair finished third in the Heisman voting. Everybody saw the numbers he put up at Alcorn, but nobody saw him play.
Yeah.
Nobody, you know, and it was always sort of a, well, okay, can he do it in the NFL? There was still sort of the lingering black quarterback issue.
Yep.
You know, he had to overcome a lot of that to become beloved.
Well, it took him a while to get going in the league, too.
All Derrick Henry had to do was a 99-yard touchdown run against Jacksonville on a Thursday night where the whole football world said, oh, yeah, that guy.
You know, good.
And that's all of a sudden it was like, yes, you know, that's what we saw at Alabama. He's that in the NFL now. So in terms of the respect for his game and the understanding of his greatness, that was all much, much easier for Henry than it was for McNair. Like McNair, you really did have to watch him over a long period of time to,
yep,
understand. You know, like, if people had realized, for example, the first game at Nissan Stadium, it was the perfect encapsulation of everything McNair. He struggled a little bit. He got booed. He got hurt. People cheered when Neil O'Donnell came in. McNair comes back in, leads a rally. They win the game by one. Like, it was everything that Steve McNair was, but people didn't understand that at the time.
Yep.
And it was only over a period of years that you're like, oh, you know what, that guy's really something.
Yeah.
And that's just the realities of their individual situations, I guess.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Heidi from Dixon texting in, I'm young, and it's a what-have-you-done-lately league. Derrick Henry already is the best Titan to me. This coming from Heidi and Dixon.
Well, and I get that. I get that completely. It stuns me to this day that, you know, when I talk about, for example, the first game at Nissan Stadium, that was 22 years ago. Like, yeah. For me, I remember it vividly. And, you know, time does move very quickly. And but for somebody who's a little younger, I could absolutely understand the sense that Derrick Henry would be number one on this discussion.
Like, the Steve McNair comebacks and what he played through, that was stuff of legend, especially the stories that you hear from, like, when Floyd Reese was on with us for so many years. Like, the stories that he would tell about Steve, yeah, that you didn't even know about,
yeah, right,
all that was, and what we already knew, that was stuff of legend.
Sure.
What we're seeing from Derrick Henry these last 3 years, wouldn't you think of in 18, he had the 99-yard run that will go down as one of the most epic touchdown runs in NFL history. Then the, you know, putting the team on his back, going all the way to the AFC title game where he was just a bulldozer. That was stuff of legend. Last year, 2,000 yards and how he did it, that's stuff of legend. Like, yeah, those are the only two players, not to discount anything that Eddie George did. I mean, my favorite growing up. But Eddie George wasn't to quite that level. I mean, he was awesome, fan favorite, great in the community. But you know Eddie George's names.
You're not going to be. We don't talk about particular Eddie George moments 20
right,
years
right,
later.
Right.
The way you do McNair moments, and the way you will be doing Derrick Henry moments
exactly,
20 years from now.
Well, right, that's why I said this kind of halfway through last year while the season was going on. If you're a Titans fan, I hope you're kind of like taking stock of what you're watching right now, because this doesn't happen very often with Derrick Henry. The type of player that he is in today's NFL at that position, I mean, you just don't see it from anybody else. So I hope if you're a Titans fan, you can watch that,
I mean,
and enjoy what you're seeing right now.
This guy's led the league in rushing. This is what's so interesting about running backs these days. Guy's led the league in rushing 2 years in a row. He ran for 2,000 yards, fifth highest total in league history. And there is discussion around NFL circles as to whether he is the best running back in the NFL.
Yeah, I know. It's credible.
It's absurd. It's absurd. The job of a running back still is to run the ball. It's in the title.
Running
Nobody's
back.
Better at that than Derrick Henry.
We'll continue this discussion when we come back. Taking your thoughts on Derrick Henry on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. 1025 The Game and T-Mobile have partnered up to give you a chance to experience a Nashville SC game this season. Tune in every Monday to Darren, Donick, and Chase for the keyword to text in to win. Good luck from 1025 The Game, T-Mobile, and Nashville SC. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. It's NASCAR weekend in Nashville. Be sure to get your tickets for Saturday and Sunday as tickets are going fast. Kids 12 and under get in free on Friday and Saturday, plus experience the post-race fireworks on Friday night. RV camping for NASCAR weekend is still available. For more info, visit NashvilleSuperspeedway.com. Be sure to tune in for the Ally 400 NASCAR Cup Series race broadcasted this Sunday on 102.5 The Game. Coverage begins at 1:30 and the race begins at 2:30. We'll have our very own Chase McCabe on the show tomorrow morning at 7:30 to break down NASCAR weekend and his role in NASCAR weekend as well. So looking forward to that coming up. Right now, talking Titans, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Michael and Madison texting in, there are talks about Derrick Henry going for 2,000 again. How many other running backs in history have had that discussion even once, much less a second season in a row?
Well, discussion, I mean, Chris Johnson,
yeah,
you know, he buried himself talking about how he was going to go for 2,500.
Yeah.
And I really, in contrast to that, I really like Derrick Henry's, you know, approach to following it up, where he hasn't talked about any of that.
Yep.
In terms of, I mean, and I think that's naturally kind of his approach. I genuinely believe I just want to know what I can do today to get better kind of guy. And he doesn't tend to look long term. You know, everybody who gets 2,000 typically the discussion comes up, can it happen again? You know, Eric Dickerson came reasonably close. I think he had an 1,800-yard year or something after after his 2105. But, you know, it's certainly not easy to do. You know, Chris Johnson, you thought, could potentially do it just because he was a breakaway threat
so
every
fast,
time. You know,
yeah.
Like, I mean, it you felt like there's going to be at least one carry every game of 50 yards or more. And, you know, those things can add up pretty quickly. Of course, it didn't work out that well for him. He never even came. I mean, never even sniffed it again.
Well, the one I thought might do it was Adrian Peterson.
Yeah.
He runs for 2,097 in 2012, and he was just an absolute truck out there. And he's kind of different than Derrick Henry, but same from the aspect of he can run you over, but he can also run around you and outrun you as well. Goes 2,000 the next year, 14 games, 1,200 yards. I mean, it's just it's hard to get back to that level.
It's hard. And it'd be interesting to go back and look if anybody had any kind of wide receivers comparable to A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, too. And,
yeah.
You know, how I mean, because that's a big part of the discussion in terms of Derrick Henry's chances. You know, theoretically, up until 2 weeks ago, every defense on the schedule, every defense coordinator was thinking, okay, when we play the Titans, we're going to load up the box. We're going to make Ryan Tannehill try to beat us.
Yep.
And it's probably a much more daunting thought now to say, well, we're going to put 8-9 guys in the box and just defend one-on-one everywhere else on the field.
Yeah, that could become a problem pretty quickly for defensive coordinators around the league. Josh in Kentucky on the text line. The Titans' only chance of advancing far in the playoffs this coming season is with a vastly improved defense. But I do believe in Jones, Brown, and Henry. They'll put up enough points in the regular season to cover up the defensive ineffectiveness. So what do you think about Josh's thought of the offense is good enough to get you through the regular season, but if you make a run in the playoffs, you're going to need a vastly improved defense.
I agree wholeheartedly. That's the thing. You need to get through, if you're the Titans, you need to get through the early part of that schedule at about 500, I think. And you need to use that time to get the defense in order. And then the last 9-10 games, whatever, if the defense can put it together and Derrick Henry will be wearing down, will be beating up on defenses that are getting worn down as the year goes on, then I think you can sort of get on a run, build that sort of momentum like you did in 2019 and become a dangerous playoff team. But if it's like we saw last year where defense has its moments, but you're never really confident of them completely stopping anybody, I think we'll see a similar scenario to what we saw last year.
Andrew from Dover on the text line. With the extra game, do you think Henry could break the record this season? So Eric Dickerson's record of 2,105 with 17 games now on the schedule, do you think Derrick Henry has a chance? Even though he ran for 2,000 a year ago, do you think he has a chance to take down the NFL rushing record this year?
Yes. The easy answer is yes. The additional game makes it easier. I mean, it's the Roger Maris discussion, right?
Yep.
Like, you know, are the records comparable because Roger Maris played 162 game season, Babe Ruth played 154 game season, Maris hit 61 home runs, Ruth hit 60. You know, one home run in 8 games. Well, yes, you know, if Derrick Henry rushes for 2,106 yards in 17 games, his per game average won't be as good as Eric Dickerson's, but it'll still be the record. It absolutely makes a difference. And I think, you know, that's one extra game that defenses have to play later in the year where they're a little more sore, a little more tired. You know, everybody will tell you at the end of the year, nobody's 100%. You know, Derrick Henry always looks a little closer to his 100% than a lot of other players do at the end of the year. So I think that's, it certainly helps his chances.
Well, it's interesting when you talk about the record standpoint, too, because, I mean, obviously Eric Dickerson does his in 16 games. As O.J. Simpson put out on video a couple weeks ago, he did his in 14
games. 14
games,
yes, he did.
So, I mean, it's been a little bit different in terms of getting to 2,000. I mean, I think O.J. Simpson had 2,003 rushing yards in 14 games, if memory serves me correctly. I mean, you could still make the argument that could be the best season we've seen from a running back.
Yeah. And, I mean, the good thing for Derrick Henry is he has the Houston Texans on the schedule twice again.
He does.
Because that's apparently these days that's a guaranteed 200 yards yes. plus. You know, he's done it three straight times against them, which that's a remarkable thing in and of itself.
Yeah.
The one team, three games in a row, 200-plus rushing yards. I've never seen anything like that. And that, you know, that's what Henry's going to have to do, though. I mean, he had three 200-yard games last year. That was more than a third, well over a third of his yards, almost 40% of his yards came in three games last year. You're going to have those really big games in order to get there. You're not going to do it by rushing for 125 yards a few times and then have a 70-yard game in there. I mean, you have to have the really long runs and the really big games, and you have to be healthy to do that.
Not only Houston, but Jacksonville as well.
Jacksonville.
For him specifically, he owns the Jags.
He does.
But Houston more so. Like, Houston has become his number one whipping boy more so than the Jags right now, which is remarkable to say, because he has made the Jags look like little boys from time to time.
Taylor from Fort Campbell on the text line says the Titans have a chance to have three players with over 1,000 yards. That might be greatest show on turf stuff if they can put it all together. Talking about Julio Jones, A.J. Brown, and Derrick Henry.
And you know, if those three guys account for 85% of the total offense this year, I'm good with that.
Yeah,
that goes back to what I said. You know, if you're Todd Downing, don't overthink it, right? You know, those guys are all well above average at their position. So give them the ball. If Anthony Firkser only catches 20 passes.
Sorry,
okay. Buck. Yeah, that's right. If Josh Reynolds, who caught 52 last year with the Rams, only catches 15 passes this year, okay, you know, just enjoy the show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's why these guys are here. You have them, use them. I don't want to hear that Julio Jones is the best decoy in the league, or that, well, Julio Jones has been attracting so much coverage, you know, that we've had the opportunities to throw the ball to Firkser and Reynolds and whatnot. Throw the ball to Julio Jones.
Mason on YouTube says defense just has to be average. Last four teams from last year all had average defenses, other than the Bucks. They were the only one with a top 10 defense. Now, they also won the Super Bowl.
I was going to say that, yeah, which one of those last four won the Super Bowl?
Yes.
Yeah, at some point you have to be able to really put it to somebody defensively, and that's what, you know, what we've said, this Titans defense needs to find its identity.
When we come back, we will switch gears and get into a little Nashville Predators talk. What should the strategy be for the expansion draft? And what's it going to take for David Poile and the Predators maybe to rid themselves of a big contract? We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 94.9 is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listen in tomorrow night as Nashville SC takes on the New York Red Bulls. The match begins at 7 p.m. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. David Beauclair in today from SI.com. Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jacob from Murfreesboro texting in. In a time where it's easy to be a prisoner of the moment when it comes to discussing greatness, I think it applies to Henry as possibly the greatest Titan ever. He's been the best running back in the league for the last 2 to 3 years and carried a big chunk of the offense for a playoff team at a time when running backs aren't carrying the ball like that anymore. You could make the argument that his 2,000-yard season in this era of football might be the most impressive 2,000-yard season in the history of the league. What do you think of that? Derrick Henry's 2,000-yard season, maybe the most impressive in the history of the league, given the era of football that he plays in.
I would take the opposite stance. Not that it – and I don't mean to minimize it and say it wasn't impressive, because I watched it and it was impressive. But, you know, there's a school of thought that says with all the spread offenses, you know, the key to defending those – is smaller, faster guys. So Derrick Henry's not running into 265-pound middle linebackers like Jack Lambert, for example, and Mike Singletary and Ray Lewis and guys like that. A lot of those 2,000-yard seasons came at a time when everybody ran the ball and it was understood that, you know, the running game was sort of essential to everything that happened on offense, and you had to try and stop the run. Now, a lot of defenses are built to stop the pass first, and that's one thing that I like that the Titans have done in recent years, is they're kind of zigging when everybody else is zagging and going against the flow. And I think that, you know, whatever the trends are, that can work in your favor if you're a football team like that, because, you know, teams just don't match up with you well, and I think that's the case with the Titans and Henry. So I don't necessarily buy that logic, but it still was an impressive season nonetheless.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. David, it's going to be an interesting next couple of weeks for David Poyle and the Nashville Predators as they prepare for the expansion draft coming up, Seattle coming into the league, and it's the same format as the expansion draft when Vegas came in the league. You can go 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, 1 goalie, or you can take the 8 skater route. Now, I look at the forwards the Predators have. I've got a hard time coming up with 4 or 5 that I would protect, much less 7. So my guess would be they're going the 8 skater route and might even be protecting 5 defensemen, like we saw the New York Islanders do when Vegas came into the league. As you look at where the Predators sit right now after the season they just had, the run to get in the playoffs down the stretch, but also factoring in some big decisions coming up this offseason, with the expansion draft being the beginning of that, big contracts like Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene on the books. What do you think the discussions are like right now for David Poyle and the Predators? And what would kind of be your approach to this expansion draft as you look at the options the Predators have on the table?
If I'm David Poyle, I'm looking at this saying, I want Seattle to do me a favor, to create some flexibility. David Poyle hung on to the idea too long that the 2017 team was so close to winning the Stanley Cup, all they needed was another shot. And he gave too many long-term contracts to too many guys. I want Seattle to get me out of one of those contracts. I want Seattle to take Ryan Ellis off my hands, for example. Like, Ryan Ellis is not the player he was in 2015, 2016, 2017. Ever since he got hurt that knee in the Cup Final Series against Pittsburgh, he's not been the same guy. Remember, like, no one confused him with Shea Weber, but there was a time there where he would unload from the point, and you're like, man, that was a bomb from that little guy.
Oh, yeah?
You haven't seen that. Like, that bomb is gone, has been gone for years. He's not as good a skater as he was. I don't think he's ever been the same guy he was since he had that knee injury. And if I'm David Poyle, I am trying to figure out anything I can do to maybe get him and that contract off my roster, give me a little more flexibility. If this last season taught the Predators anything, it should be that, you know what, you've got to keep the roster churning. You know, the young guys came in and they were the ones who provided the energy and provided the toughness and sort of created the mood that carried this team through the second half of the season and into the playoffs. So I'm looking at some of these guys that I've had around for a while and that are still under contract for years. I'm thinking, I'd like to unload one or two of these, and Seattle's got to take somebody from me. What can I do to make sure they take one of those guys?
Well, and to that point, a lot of Predators fans, when they hear that, the two names that come up are Johansson and Duchene, given the fact they make $8 million per year. They're at center ice, and, I mean, let's be honest, the production has not been anywhere close to where they've needed it to be over the course of the last two regular seasons. Now, for some reason, and we've seen this really throughout his entire time here so far, whenever the playoffs come around, Ryan Johansson tends to elevate his game. I mean, he was pretty good in the playoffs once again. He was over a point per game against Arizona. We know what he did in 17 and 18 as well. But it's been night and day between Johansson in the playoffs and Johansson in the regular season. And then Matt Duchene, quite frankly, outside of the first week and a half he was here, has just not been very productive. I think Predators fans, some of them say, all right, well, you leave those two exposed, and Seattle will take one of those two, and that'll be that. I don't think it's that simple. I mean, I think you absolutely leave them exposed. But to me, if I'm Seattle, if you want me to take one of those two contracts, if I'm David Poile,
you're
giving
me
something
else. Yeah, I'm going to make it clear that, well, no, I think I really, you know, because that's what David Poile did back in 98.
Yep.
He worked that angle with a lot of teams. He's like, well, I'll take that guy if that's what you really want, but you know, I like this guy over here, so maybe you're going to have to convince me. And among those two, and that is an interesting argument. I'm trying to unload Matt Duchene at least with Ryan Johansson. There's a sense that you know what you're going to get, because if you look at Ryan Johansson's career, even going back to his days in Columbus, Ryan Johansson knows it's a long season, and he knows how to sort of navigate the season, or he has figured out how he likes to navigate the season. We'll put it that way.
Yeah.
October through Thanksgiving, historically, he's terrible. You can look, his days in Columbus in particular, because it feels like forever since we've had a real 82-game season.
Yeah.
I know it's only been 2 years, but it feels like forever. But his numbers always start to climb around Thanksgiving. And then late February, early March, there's sort of another little. And then, like, to your point, there's a different guy in the playoffs. Is that ideal? No. But at least you know what you're getting.
Right.
You know, you kind of understand that, and you deal with that. And coaches and GMs, they like to know what they can expect. Nothing makes them more crazy than saying, I'm going to put this guy out here because I know he's going to shoot 8 times, and then he doesn't shoot.
Right.
You know, like that drives you nuts. So, Duchene, you're paying all this money, and you're not getting what you expected. But every so often there's a shift or two here or there. They're like, oh, okay, now he's – no, he's not.
You don't even know where he's going to play right now.
Yeah, I mean,
you don't know if it's going to be on the wing or if it's going to be at center.
So that's where you say, okay – we signed you this contract. It didn't work. This is our chance for both sides to get a fresh start. You know, if it comes down to a choice between those two, yeah, for that reason, I'm going to Ron Francis and saying, what can I do to get Matt Duchene to Seattle?
Well, and then the question would be, if you're David Poile, how far are you willing to go to make one of those two things happen? Like, are you willing to give up a Philip Tomasino? Or a Rem Pitlick, or a first-round pick?
I don't think you have to go to that extreme with
what do you think it'll
Tomasino.
Be?
It'd be a guy further down on the prospect list. I don't think it'd have to be one of your top five prospects to make that happen. Because if you're, you know, if you're Seattle, you do need some sort of name recognition. There is a salary cap floor. I mean,
yep.
you do have to spend a certain amount of money. So if you can, if you have one big chunk there, then that gives you freedom to put other building blocks in place, so to speak. I'm trying to think of the prospect list, like who would come to mind. But yeah, I don't. You know, maybe one of your lesser goalie prospects, for example, because expansion teams are always desperate for goalie depth. You know, that's how Thomas Vokoun ended up in Nashville, for example. That was a deal with Montreal. Like, it was, don't take this player, and we'll give you Thomas Vokoun. So they ended up taking Patrick Schellberg, got Vokoun thrown in, and it turned out to be one of the better deals David Poile made.
If it absolutely had to be Rem Pitlick, I think I would be willing to take that chance. I would not do it for Tomasino.
No.
I probably wouldn't give up a first-round pick.
No.
Not even a second-rounder.
But Pitlick?
But, and it's, you know, I don't know what Pitlick's ceiling truly is. And if Seattle is gung-ho about it, I would be willing to do that, as opposed to them not taking Duchene and then them ending up with like Yarncroke or Sissons or one of your valuable Swiss Army knives that you can have on the bottom six. Yeah.
I think it'd be more, you know, like a goalie prospect would be easy to give up because you've got Saros in place. You know he's the long-term answer there. You just drafted a guy high who you're really excited about, and he's probably going to be the next in line. You're gonna take the same approach with him that you did with Saros. So, you know, a goalie who's been in the system for a couple years, hasn't really gotten anywhere, you say.
Connor Ingram?
Yeah. You go that way, and I think that's probably all it would take.
We'll continue the discussion on the Predators when we come back. Got some of your thoughts to get to on our text line as well. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ryan and Herbitage, hang with us. We'll get to you coming up next as well. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
This hour of Robbie and Rex Road is brought to you by Trane. Get a great deal this spring on a new Trane heating and cooling system. At Trane, they test so it runs. Visit traneinfo.com to find your local dealer and learn more. It's hard to stop a Trane.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. We'll have Trey Wallace from Rocky Top Insider joining us to begin the 8 o'clock hour. We'll look ahead to the Vols in Omaha with him. Also, get into a little Josh Heupel action for the Tennessee football program as well. That coming up at 8 o'clock with Trey Wallace. Right now, talking Predators, taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Let's go to our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in Ryan from Hermitage, who wants to weigh in on the Predators. Ryan, thanks for calling into Robbie and Rex Road.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
You want to get rid of Duchesne, the best way I could see, it's going to suck because you're going to give Seattle another quality player, but maybe giving them Arvidsson and Ren Pitlick to take Duchesne. Because LSU have teams like Boston, the Oilers, Toronto, and you have a few other teams out there that are still looking for that top defenseman, and Ellis could be a good value chip to get maybe, like if you send them to Boston, you can get maybe a Jake DeBrus and a second-round pick for Ellis. And get rid of the contract and get a cheaper one and a decent quality player on top of that. And also, to get rid of Shane, you can also move into open space while giving rid of Arvidsson, because I think it's time to move on also from Arvidsson as well.
Thanks for the call, Ryan. We appreciate it. We'll talk about it. I don't know that you'd have to give up Arvidsson and Pitlick to get rid of Duchesne.
That's extreme. Yeah, you don't have it. The price is not that high because there's no competition either. I mean, it's one team. It's you're not negotiating against anybody else. So the price isn't going to get outrageous for any of these moves.
Now, to Arvidsson and kind of the discussion around him, it is interesting kind of what they're going to do here, because I've heard some people say leave Arvidsson exposed and see whether or not Seattle would take him. I mean, I think there's a good chance they would take him at that point. His contract is not that expensive, but also, you know, Ron Francis is not dumb. You can watch Victor Arvidsson play right now and pretty quickly come to the conclusion that he's not the same guy anymore. Like, the speed burst the last 2 years has just not been there, and he's not been the same guy. To the point where now, if you're a Predators fan, I think you're wondering if it's ever going to get back there. But I think if you're another team and you watch him film and you watch him play and you watch the film of him, you're having those same concerns watching Victor Arvidsson.
The fear when he signed that contract was, can he do it year in and year? You know, he'd had one good year. The first year of the contract was really good. You were feeling good, but you know, it was, can he? Because he's a little guy,
yeah,
and he plays really hard. Can he hold up over the course of an 82-game season, year after year after year? And it's pretty clear at this point the answer is no. I mean, Arvidsson's never been a guy who produced in the playoffs the way he does during the regular season. He's had a couple of goals here or there, but nothing like, and he doesn't hold up through the regular season, basically. So yeah, he's not the same guy. If you're right, if you're Ron Francis, yeah, you want speed. Yeah, you want goal scoring. That's, you know, those are important elements of the game. They're exciting for a new fan base and whatnot. I don't know that Victor Arvidsson's gonna give you that. That's another guy, if you're the Predators, that you'd say, we love Victor Arvidsson, but if he's gone, okay, you know, we've got younger, faster guys right now that might give us a little bit of a different element.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben texting in, David got us into this mess, so he needs to get us out. He's got to make something happen so that Seattle is willing to take a big contract. How likely it is doesn't matter to me. He's got to get it done or you fire him. I still wish it was a new GM that was making all the moves to better the team at this point. But if David is staying, I still want what's best for the team.
Yeah, I said it before. David Poyle made the mistake that a lot of managers make, which is if you come close to winning it, you think you are close.
Yep.
And championships are moving targets. It's not like in 2017-18 this team picked up two games away from winning the Stanley Cup. That's not how it works. You know, if you didn't win, you weren't good enough. You need to do something else. And just look at the history the last 15 years or so of the Stanley Cup runners up. How many have gone back to the Cup final within? Certainly none have done it the next year since 2008-2009 when Pittsburgh and Detroit yep. played in back-to-back years. Nobody goes back even 2 or 3 years later. That's just the way it works. And David Poyle miscalculated, thinking if I keep this team together, we're right there, we're close, we're going to make it happen. No, that's not the way it goes. And the text is exactly right. He has painted this team into a corner with too many long-term contracts for guys who at this point are just getting older now.
Is Tampa last year, since your example, David, I mean, they made it last year in 2020 after making it in 2015.
That's probably the closest one.
That might be the only one.
It may be the only one. And that's 5 years.
And if you want, you can even say, you know, does last year count, given that it was just, you know, it wasn't a typical season in any way, shape, or form. But it just doesn't happen. Like, it's remarkable to me that there is a huge difference between winning the championship and coming in second. And it's no different in the NFL. I mean, look at Super Bowl losers. They're as likely to not make the playoffs the next year as they are to be in the playoffs, where the Super Bowl champion is almost always back in the playoffs and going. I don't know what that is. I just know it's a real thing in sports.
Yeah, it has been a real thing. And if you're the Predators, that's why I think this year is so interesting. And there's kind of been reaction on both sides of it after the season has ended and after we've gone through the press conferences as well. There's a portion of the fan base that feels like, all right, I mean, they figured something out coming down the stretch, and that's going to be what this team is moving forward. They're going to be a bigger threat coming into next year with an 82-game schedule. They've got younger pieces in there, and they figured something out with the way they need to play. And there's another school of thought is, all right, well, your goaltender had basically a .950 save percentage coming down the stretch. He was awesome, and that covered up for a lot of offensive deficiencies that this team still has, and we don't really know how close this team is to being a true Stanley Cup contender.
And I agree with you there that a formula for winning is not, well, we'll be okay and just trust our goalie will make every single save.
Yeah.
That's not a way you're going to win in this league.
It's not, and I don't think there's any question about it, and this goes back to Johansson to Duchesne again. This team offensively right now, it's just not good enough. And no. I don't know what the quick route is to fixing that. I don't think there is a quick route to fixing that. It's not like I've heard Predators fans ask if they should go make a trade for Jack Eichel. Like, I don't know what they have that Buffalo, I mean, it's going to take a lot to get Jack Eichel. I just don't see something like that happening. I don't see them going out and getting a Mitch Marner either if Toronto makes him available. So I don't really see a quick fix offensively. I think it's going to take kind of changing this core in and out a little bit.
They need to get over this idea that they're a skilled team. There's a huge difference in the NHL between the teams that pick first or second overall in the draft a couple times and everybody else. If you get a Connor McDavid, if you get an Austin Matthews, if you get a Sidney Crosby or a Geno Malkin, great. Good for you. That's, you know, work with that, build around that. For everybody else, like we were talking about with Barry Trotz earlier, you need to have that kind of a team. You need to have a team that is that is tough to play against with every line that is that you know you it's not just the 50 goal score. You know, you can't count on somebody. You say, well, somebody's going to get us 50 goals. No, just you know, win 2-1 games, win 3-2 games, play good defense. There's a lot of things I like that John Hines is doing with this team in terms of getting back to some of that defensive responsibility and understanding that you know, it's not just let's get to the other end of the ice and try and score all the time the way things had gotten with Peter Laviolette there. But you know, this is not a team with an Austin Matthews or a Connor McDavid or whatnot. So stop acting like it and be one of those teams that's going to have to gut out games. And I think if they can get that sort of, you know, players, coaches, management, everybody, if they can sort of agree on that, that'll be a big step in the right direction.
When we come back, we will switch gears and look ahead to Omaha for the Tennessee Volunteers. Trey Wallace from Rocky Top Insider joins us coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.